The year is 1987, and Robin Williams finally breaks out into his movie star mode, starring as American Armed Forces Network disc jockey Adrian Cronauer. Set in the early days of Vietnam, director Barry Levinson blends humor with the harsh realities of war and Cronauer's unfiltered high-energy broadcast. Williams' performance, largely improvised, showcases both comedic brilliance and emotional depth, earning him an Academy Award nomination. This film contrasts the absurdity of war with the human desire for truth and connection, and it touches on themes of censorship, conflict, and the power of voice in an impressive world. This week on Back to the Balcony, we cover the latest pick from our listeners, Good Morning Vietnam. Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, two titans of cinematic review. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong, but always captivating. Your host Antonio of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast and Justin Henson of the Movie Wire are here to take you back to the balcony. And this is a cool one. How are we on like episode 83 or 84? And we did not have this on our list, right?
100%. So I know this one, it was on my bucket list for this show because this one is very nostalgic for me because I think we talked about it in one of your cult-worthy shows that this is one of my first movies.
And, you know, I think before we get too deep into this conversation, we have to throw a quick little apology out there to the audience. We were supposed to have Carnosaur be on the show a couple weeks ago. But there was a problem with the audio, so the timing didn't really line up because we wanted that to come out the same week within the week of release of the new Jurassic Park movie. That did not happen. We will re-record it, though, because that's a great conversation. Hopefully we can capture that lightning in the bottle again. But one of the things that we talked about in that episode was like, okay, let's get back to listener picks. And we've been waiting patiently, and they've come through. We've got three in the last 2 weeks, so we're adding those to the list. But this was the first one in the bucket, and I was really excited about it because, once again, this is a film that I watched on repeat as a child, and for some reason, the last 10, 15 years hasn't even crossed my mind. Like, it's just something to do, I think, personally. It's with the passing of Robin Williams almost 10 years ago now, right? I've just been kind of shying away from Robin Williams movies because they make me sad. You know, like, I haven't watched Birdcage in a very long time. I think the Night at the Museum movies, because of my kids, are the only Robin Williams movies that I've been watching in the last decade. So it was kind of heartbreaking to watch this film and see that performance and see that energy and remember that this was the movie that really made him a mainstream star. Because up until then, he was like an offbeat, quirky comedies that may have been critically well-received, but they weren't blockbusters. They weren't like, let's line up, rent this movie, watch this movie. They were more kind of like character pieces. World According to Garp, The Best Years of Our Lives, like these kind of movies. And here he comes with this, allowing himself to completely improvise most of the dialogue in this movie. Most of his role in this film is completely off the cuff, unscripted, and I'd say in many instances, a comic that would do that in a scripted film, it doesn't work. It doesn't blend well. Yet, I think between Barry Levinson's direction, the story and the setting, and then what he does with his improvisations, I can't think of a film that was better suited for him and his style than this movie.
I don't think anywhere in anybody's vocabulary or conversation that Robin Williams wasn't a talented man. His improvisation, whether you understood the freight train of material that he just unloads, whether you understood what he was saying or it was just missed in translation, he unloaded a lot. And it doesn't matter if you knew the words coming out of his mouth. It was the pure energy that he presented, the pure brilliance of comedic timing. And when it comes to his death, this is where some people steer away like yourself and some people embrace him. I'm on the opposite side where I was introduced to Robin Williams at a young age. I still remember walking up to the movie posters of choosing the Fox and the Hound or the big movie poster with Robin Williams. My dad saying, can we see this? And Robin Williams was a really almost a second dad, if I were to be kind of risque on that, to just kind of grow up and introduce myself to the films. And more importantly, nowadays, when we have a movie being introduced, we look at the experience and we look at what movie we're going to take our kids to. And this wouldn't be at top of mind, especially in the 80s or 90s for a first film. And walking out of a theater, you usually get the same questions is, how did you like it? What did you think? This is a movie my father said, how did this make you feel? And this is one of those movies that I didn't know as a six, 7 year old how to feel. I knew I loved Robin Williams because I attached myself to him and the energy. But this is a movie with a topic that really does go in between the hard drama or the war drama, war romance, or the far right comedy of war. This fits in between where the emotions are all over the place. And this was a heavily marketed comedy at that time. But this is where improvisation really does work here. And with topics as harsh as Vietnam, Williams makes it work. And we are engaged into this world that he creates. So this one is an absolutely brilliant movie, but more importantly, a brilliant war movie that just doesn't focus on the hardship of pure war.
And I think one of the reasons why it can play in those waters so well is because, you know, they mention it in the movie and the critics mention it as well. The way that we're getting the story across through the dialogue and the exposition, but also the fact that we have the news teletype that shows us like how the war is starting. We're in the early days of the Vietnam War, essentially like we're in year two, and it's still kind of like a police action more than a full-blown war. The presence of America in this country is still rather small, and there is a lot of resistance from the locals, not so much as there would be in the future. But this was like a good introduction to how the Vietnam War started. And then movies like Full Metal Jacket and Hamburger Hill and Dead Presidents and Platoon showed us more of like what the war did to soldiers and to the people back home later on. So it's still kind of early on. And that's a great way to kind of start this kind of movie and tell this kind of story, because it's still like there's a sense of temporariness, right? Like they are not sure if they're in there for the long haul. Everyone is just kind of there going through the motions. And I feel like that is why the establishment is so against him and his quirky ways and his uncensored material and his comedy, is because the sense of having some levity for the soldiers isn't as important at this moment as it would be later on in the war. And that is what creates a great internal struggle with this character, is that his enemy in the movie is not the Viet Cong. If anything, the Viet Cong are kind of his friends. It dabbles in those waters. His main conflict with the movie is the establishment. It is the military brass, with the exception of the one general who likes his comedy, right? But everyone else is like, you need to fall in line. You need to be by the book, and you need to salute me, like Bruno Kirby's character, right? So it does work really well with Robin Williams' performance and the way he brings that energy. I guess later on, as we realize that the real Adrian Cronauer was not as bombastic as Robin Williams' character portrayals. In fact, he hated the portrayal. But then again, this is where they took real artistic liberties with biopics. They still do. I wouldn't want to watch this movie any other way, though, right? Like, it doesn't matter how close to the facts this movie is. When you have Robin Williams doing what he does and Barry Levinson directing the way he does to make the war important, to make the soldiers and the other characters important, and let Robin Williams do his own thing, I think that's where the real magic happens. It's almost the same. Like, it's a double head punch. Like, a year or two later, he does Rain Man. And the same thing. He lets Dustin Hoffman do his thing and creates a world around him to essentially boost that performance and make a film out of it. I feel that these two movies are very similar in the sense of, like, you have a very exuberant star doing an exuberant performance and then creating a world for that performance to live in.
I think when it comes to building the environment here, I think Levinson does a great job on building the message of the voice is at war with everybody else. The voice is kind of the underdog hero of this story versus what we actually see, the opposite of the enemy in the environment. So we spend most of the movie going against the establishment. We have most of the movie of Robin Williams pushing back, not caring what the authoritarian figures want him to say. He's doing it for the people. He's doing it for the atmosphere setting, I would say, to set the tone of the movie. And that's what the biggest special piece of this is building the atmosphere, because we have the environment that is very inviting. We have almost a breath in between war of Robin Williams conversating with the community, teaching an English class, joking around. All that is building something that's just not war. It's building stakes to what's going to happen in the climax, in the second half. So we've seen time over time war movies that just focus on the good versus bad and who we should view as the bad. But here, there really isn't a focus on the good versus bad, other than Robin Williams' voice. And when it comes to the improvisation of it, does it always work with Williams? Robin Williams fans, yes, because he's brilliant at it. But there are times in this movie that it does go a little overboard to kind of throw the movie a little bit off. We have one moment, and it, from youth to adult, it has always drove me crazy. We have Twan, I think, at the end, where they're going into that big speech where you killed my sister, my family, my neighbor. He sheds a tear. And then the movie decides Robin Williams to go after him, and you can tell it's improv. He screams, "This isn't going to look good on your resume," and it's not needed. We have established that emotional stake, that impact right there. So does it always work? No. But 90% of the movie, it does. And this is where you have to be very brave as an actor to really have that improvisation skill, to really go all in. So giving credit to Mr. Williams, this is something that no other actor could have accomplished in a type of movie like this, with a couple of missteps when it comes to the emotional stake at the end.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that is something that I've definitely noticed in this last watch, because like I said, it's been at least 10 years, if not more, since I've seen it before, and I used to watch it all the time, is that using your analytical mind as you're watching this movie, there are some uphill battles when you get out of the recording booth. When you get out of the booth and he does his spiel, and then we have to deal with real-world consequences and interactions. The fact that in a sense, we get the idea that he's kind of a womanizer, and then he kind of just hyper-focuses on the one, and her brother is this kind of like Viet Cong terrorist, right? And we get to like this guy, and that's a great performance. Very much like some of the characters we've seen in war movies that were, let's say, indigenous people to the area that really weren't actors, but they bring an amazing performance into the film that you're like, wow, where did this guy come from? Oh, he's not even an actor. He's just part of this community, part of this culture, and he fits in. That character does a really great job. The problem is, I think sometimes they're trying to tell too many stories in this one movie, you know? And I feel like even though Robin Williams does a great job with the dramatics of the film, there are times where I feel like I'm watching two, if not three, different versions of this character. But at the same time, that almost feels like that could be intentional. Because you've got your, like Howard Stern, you've got your persona behind the microphone, you've got your persona in the real world, and then you've got the persona that no one else sees, who may be very insecure, or maybe has an inadequacy complex. I don't know. I think that is recognizable for me, but at the same time, I did not hate it, because it felt like, even if it wasn't intentional, it still works. And this character is kind of just off the wall, off kilter. He's not a very balanced man. And that is why he has conflict with authority. That is why he's always looking for trouble and getting into trouble. So it's more of an observation than it is a grievance that I feel like there are multiple versions of this same character in the movie.
I 100% agree. And I think I wouldn't say I have kind of a grievance with it or a problem with it, but I think the execution of the messaging is where we land the problem. because we have Robin Williams, Adrian, that really has to have this persona. And I think the direction that Levinson wanted to go in is, how do we have all these outside personal conflicts, this war going on, these friendships going on, and how does it affect a man behind the microphone? And we see a little bit of that when it comes to where he is facing the explosion at the bar, where it all comes crashing down, that he has to get in front of a microphone. But there is so much more to this man going on outside. You have the seeking of a romance, you have a friend, you have a betrayal, you have a war going on, but we get one stake where the realization of an explosion comes crashing down. But there is a lot more to this man that we could have seen multiple examples throughout this movie of slight crescendos of breakdown to lead to that point. But at the same time, that would have ruined what I think this movie was intended to do, or what the marketing wanted it to do, which is make this more of a comedy than about a man dealing with internal conflict. So to me, it's a double-edged sword on what this movie could have done. And it is multiple stories, but at the end of the day, the filmmakers wanted this to be more targeted to a story than a man's internal conflict, to cater to Robin Williams' improvisation style. So I think at the end of the day, it's done the job it needed to do, and the balance for what it is spot on. But could it have been more? Absolutely. But that still, at the end of the day, would have made this movie a lot more bloated and a lot more dramatic than what it needed to be.
I want to take a second to talk about the cast of the movie, because when you think about the film, you're like, oh, it's the Robin Williams show. Like, it really is like the Robin Williams movie where it's mostly him. But then you watch the movie and you realize, oh, wait, there are so many great performances from the supporting cast. I mean, you've got J.T. Walsh and Bruno Kirby as like the military guys that are against the comedy. Bruno Kirby especially, you know, because normally he doesn't play a bad guy. And it's not necessarily that he's a bad guy. He is just an incompetent military guy who really thinks that he's more than he is. And everyone says it to his face. Everyone disrespects him to his face. And he just plays that cad so well, especially like the humiliation of being unfunny, but thinking he's funny. Like, it is the antithesis of what Robin Williams brings to the movie, and he does it perfectly. We've already talked about Robert Wool before. Anytime he shows up in a movie, we love it. And yeah, he's great in this movie. And he just brings that real kind of, I'm going to say, like, the, let's say, not Las Vegas showroom, but Reno showroom version of Robin Williams. A guy who does have some pitter-patter, who does have some improvisational comedy, but it is a little hacky compared to Robin Williams. I think that's totally intentional, because he was probably the funny guy on base before Adrian Cronauer shows up, and he still will tell his jokes, but he will also take a seat back to what Cronauer is doing, played to perfection. And then, of course, we've got Forrest Whitaker as Garlic, and they talk about him in the review, and Forrest Whitaker, to me, I always love that dude as a supporting character more than a main character. I'm not saying that he's a bad actor. He's an amazing actor. I always think that he really knows how to support a cast better than leading a film. That's just my opinion. My favorite Forrest Whitaker roles are roles where he is a secondary person in the movie, because he can make the main person just look and feel that much better. And he does it so well here. It's almost like he is the custodian or the chaperone for Adrian Cronauer throughout this movie to keep him out of trouble, but he ends up getting into trouble with him. And then you see like his freak fly later on. And at the end of the movie, he essentially is taking over the role of this morning disc jockey that Cronauer was doing. It's a great character growth and development thing. He does it so well. So yeah, like every time I think, oh, that is the Robin Williams movie, I have to remind myself there's a lot of great talent helping him out with it.
Whitaker has just pure likability. He can be in the worst movie possible, but I get the John Goodman vibe off of him. He is just so huggable, lovable, and yeah, you just love to see him as a side character. I agree 100%. But the side character here that wins the award is Walt, because here's the deal. Is when we see him in the background, our eyes are glued to him. When he's sitting behind Robin Williams, we are looking not necessarily always at Robin Williams. It might just be me, but I'm looking at Wall on his reaction. It is overly done, but part of comedy is the same thing. You're looking at other people's reactions. And that goes the same. If he's hanging out in the background, there's a rhyme and reason Levinson put him in the background, because his reactions are so golden. They feel so genuine. Right when Robin Williams appears, he seems to own the studio. He just knows what he's doing. There's no egos here. And everybody wants to be acknowledged by Williams at this point. And when he first goes on air, you see the reactions. Everybody loves him, but it continues primarily by Wall, who seems to be almost in love with Williams on the way he does things. He almost wants to match the way he does his show, but he can't. So to me, I loved watching Wall, even if it's in a blurry background with Williams prominent on screen. So, but you're right. The cast is, bar none, 100% a fantastic supporting cast, because they're all likable. Even when you go to Kirby's Weasley Frenchy comedy scene, it's so cringy. He's so Weasley, but
it's so cringy. And then he plays polka music.
But it's so well done. Even the polka music is somewhat entertaining, more than Kirby was. So to me, I think the cast was fantastic. You can't complain about anything with this entire cast.
And, you know, it does, of course, do what so many war movies do. It does tug at, like, the sentimental heartstrings and puts out a political propaganda message, but it's not overly saturated in it. But there are those moments where it's like, okay, this is the token. Let's play Louis Armstrong and show the horrors of war in the background. I get it. It can't be a war movie without scenes like that, but I will give it credit that it doesn't paint that picture too prominently. I mean, we just did Casualty as a War like a month ago, and that's a perfect example of like, oh, this is the horror of war. War is hell to a fault. This doesn't really do that. It shows some real graphic moments that, yes, any kind of wartime conflict is going to have casualties of innocent people, casualties of racism and classism and things like that. So it does give you those moments to remember that you are in a wartime, but it doesn't paint the whole kind of, like I said, propagandic tapestry of war for the film. It's a really good balance.
This is what it does differently compared to other war films, and I applaud it for that. Even though, again, we've said war is hell, we don't need to beat a dead horse. But here's what this movie does differently of going in between, is it doesn't show real detailed elements of war. Yeah, we do get some gore moments. We get some elements of the explosion, some deaths. We have all that. But what I found powerful, even more so than just the same old shots of war, is how the environment interacts with change. There's a war going on, and we see a montage of friends being separated, normal conversations that aren't really being had. You see a split of the Vietnam and American soldiers. So you see all these elements that don't have to end in gunshots, explosions, the normal things that we see. This movie built a foundation of building this community of everybody's in the same situation. And we don't get into that propaganda per se within the first half of the movie. And we don't even really get that at the end, other than the I can't trust you anymore element towards the climax. But we get this community being torn apart. And to me, that is the biggest devastating thing of war, is that you, besides death, we have people being torn apart, and even complete strangers that just met. You get that element. You're warmed up to this environment of all these people getting to know each other, the happy-go-lucky friendships that are built. We spend an hour and a half with these characters, and we don't get that anymore because of war. So not a gunshot, not an explosion, not tanks, but relationships. And that's what I think this movie really sought out to do, is saying that there is more than just death of war. People are being torn apart and relationships are being torn apart. And that can be just as much painful on a cinematic level and an emotional level while watching it than watching a gunshot on the fields of war.
And, you know, speaking to that as well, like the colonization aspect, where, you know, essentially Vietnam had already been colonized once by France. And even though this was a so-called police action, it does show a lot of like the idea of like the American soldiers trying to instill our culture into a foreign body. The English lesson scenes, I think they're hilarious, and those people are very charming. Obviously, those are all like improvised scenes. That's very raw and real performances from these people who are probably real residents of that area and that town to interact with them. But it does speak to the fact like, okay, these people just got out of an occupation, and here we are trying to teach everyone English, trying to assimilate the women of Vietnam into the American GI bars where local resident men aren't allowed. Like, again, like it does speak to not just the horrors of war, but the idea that for some reason, like cultures like ours can't not go into a country, supposedly save it, and not instill our culture into it. And he calls it out. He recognizes it. And he says it in his diatribes on the microphone. And I think that is something, too, that I think when you watch this movie as an adult or watch it repeatedly, if you can read in between the funny lines and quips and voices that he does, he's actually improvising based off, I'm sure, of his stand-up and just his knowledge of political science, the real concerns of what their occupation of Vietnam was actually doing to the cultures. So it works on that level too, but it's got humor to deliver that pill. And that's what makes it different than, like we said, the traditional war as hell movies. So now let's get into our critics' critique of the film. Now, this one is, you know, one of our rare two thumbs up movies, and they have a lot of great things to say about it. This was Gene's to bring to the show.
Our first film, Good Morning Vietnam, is the answer to a lot of moviegoers' prayers at long last. Even though he was very good in Moscow on the Hudson, Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam has finally found a film worthy of his talent as an improvisational comic genius, and it's a very good film overall, too. Williams plays an irreverent disc jockey assigned during 1965 in the relatively early days of Vietnam to take over a tired disc jockey slot on Armed Forces Network. The film mixes period music, a wide range of soldiers in cities and in the field, and at the center is Robin Williams with his hilarious fake interviews of soldiers he's met in the field. There's also a battle royale between the good general and a bad master sergeant over Robin Williams and just how irreverent he should be. And for all of its comedy, Good Morning Vietnam is a touching film, too, because director Barry Levinson, who did Diner and The Natural, other fine films, very quietly keeps cutting into shots of the newsroom teletape, showing the progress of the war in terms of how many soldiers, 150 soldiers, 200,000 soldiers, 400,000 soldiers, as we commit more and more American troops to the action. That's a fine touch in a fine film with a great performance by Robin Williams.
Yeah, I agree with him. And so I didn't see this in the theater. This was definitely right of the new release rentals with my parents. But they got a point. Like, I grew up with Mork and Mindy, so that's what I knew Robin Williams from, and from the comic relief videos that they used to put out. When I think about movies that I'd seen him in before this film, so like I said, World According to Garp was definitely one that made an impact on me, and I saw at a very young age. And I think that Moscow on the Hudson is a quirky kind of fun drama, but it's not necessarily a full-blown comedy. He had a lot of missteps, and it's, again, I think we see it a lot with, you know, some of the comedians they cast in films these days, where it's like Hollywood did not know what to do with him for a feature-length film. You know, when this guy is these high bursts of energy and just crazy off-the-cuff improvised humor, how can you write a film to work around that? I feel like he already had shown his dramatic chops in the movies he made before this, but I don't think that's what the public wanted from Robin Williams at that point. He needed to have a movie like this where he could deliver this kind of performance and make you laugh and maybe laugh and cry and have an emotional connection, and then he can do his movies like Awakenings, and then he can do his Good Will Huntings and win, you know, his Oscar nominations, because we already know he can be funny. So the audiences of the day needed that performance from him in order to find the rest of his performances credible and give him like the star power that he really had throughout the 80s and 90s.
This is where I'm extremely biased, because even with my first movie, this one was the foundation of cinema and Robin Williams. So it's hard for me to nitpick on anything Robin Williams does, but he is a particular talent that over the years, you have to be a filmmaker ready to embrace the Robin Williams magic and just let him go. And in the back half of his career before his death, we saw a decrescendo of that, where we saw limp comedies like RV, Old Dogs, that didn't unleash the Robin Williams, even World's Greatest Dad, that on an emotional level, didn't unleash the emotion from him. So there is a particular filmmaker made for Robin Williams. And if you're a good filmmaker, you would allow him off the leash to allow him emotionally, dramatically, comedically go. And if you don't do that, the film won't be up to par in anybody's eyes. And we, and again, my baseline for Robin Williams will always be, and again, I'm biased because it's a first movie, will always be Good Morning Vietnam, because that is a prime example of letting him off the leash in a Vietnam movie, and he can still master it.
I agree with almost everything you say, and it is the movie that Robin Williams has been waiting to make and that people who think he's brilliant have been waiting to see.
Yes.
There's one facet of the film that I'd like to talk about because it fascinated me so much, and this has nothing to do with the war, curiously enough. It's the betrayal of that character.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a guy who is all words.
Mm-hmm.
There is a wall between whoever is inside that character and his words. He uses the humor, he uses the stand-up comedy, he uses the one-liners, he uses the patter to hold people off. And at the end of the movie, curiously enough, we know a lot about the personalities of all of the supporting characters, but that central Robin Williams character is still a complete mystery. There was just no glimpse into it, and that to me is brilliant because it shows a certain kind of comic personality that I haven't seen in the movies before, where the comedians are using the humor to say, don't look inside, I'm going to keep you laughing the whole time.
Now, I agree with that, but I do think that he is not giving the moments where he's teaching English to those students enough credit, because in my opinion, that is when we do see the real him, where he is not worrying about what military brass thinks. He's not trying to impress or make lives better through the radio. This is like the rawest moments he has with real people, and they're not even speaking English. His words don't resonate with them because they can't understand his patter. Therefore, those are the truest human connections, and that's the truest human self that we see of him, because his bullshit doesn't work on these people. And that's a very important thing for this character to have throughout the movie, is those scenes with the English students, because they're both learning to understand each other, and in that process, we see the most raw version of him. I think if they didn't want to show that kind of humanity and humility for that character, then they wouldn't include those scenes, because they're really not important. They really don't have a lot to do with the movie other than see what this guy really is like away from the microphone. You could have had the side story with the sister and with Quan at the same time and not need the English scenes. I think that was an important addition to the film to show who this guy really was off the mic.
I agree to an extent where it's almost like this movie was written for Robin Williams as a vehicle, and everybody there is to support him. But here's where I'm going to go off our normal show basis, is what Roger said is so important now than it was then, because the mystery of this character is the same mystery of Robin Williams when we even got his death, where he is a mystery even up until his last day is. And we've had this conversation before. A comedic actor, you have to have some drama behind that. And that's where we see in this movie prominent, because you can tell there is drama behind the eyes of Robin Williams and his performance. You see that as almost as natural as he outputs the emotional stakes in this movie, but he still pivots back to a comedic role. But there's pain behind it that we see in this movie that he can't really get past. So when Roger actually stated that, it just kind of hit me at this point that there is more to that statement that will be timeless, even up when it comes to just not just the Adrian character, but to Robin Williams. So to me, that makes it even more spot on Roger's observation, and even more brilliant with Robin Williams' performance than what I saw originally and what I saw from the review of Siskel and Ebert then.
I mean, so they finish up with this part, which I can't wait to talk about because it is very reflective of how I feel about the same scene.
Yeah, the only problem is there is one scene where he does let some emotion come through, and that's when he visits the soldiers out in the truck, and it's quite emotional, and we see a little of him being heroic, and that, oddly enough, is the one scene that I thought, sure, it's easy. It was an easy emotion.
It went on
emotion.
Too long. It went on way, way too long. Right. They're stuck in a traffic jam, right. And he starts entertaining the troops. The point could have been made briefly, and it goes on and on and on, maybe because they wanted to keep all of his ad-libs.
Well, I think they wanted to make him a little more of a hero. They didn't need to. It's that good of a performance.
100% agree. That is like my least favorite scene in the movie because it feels like they don't know when to cut. Like they don't know what is going to be coming out of his mouth next. So they just hold on him and allow him to riff more, which at this is like right in the middle of the third act. We are just about done with the movie for this scene. And this should have been a middle of the movie scene. The fact that we're committing that much time to this scene, I get why it's there for the sake of the character, but for the sake of the movie's pace, it's kind of a killer. It's 10 minutes, I counted, of him just riffing to these soldiers, and it's the same static shots back and forth of reactions. It's shot like they were doing a stand-up comedy special, and they were just showing the audience reaction to whatever he was doing. As fun as it is, as funny as he is, it wasn't the right scene for a movie that up until this point was a masterclass in pacing, and then it just hits the brakes. I remember thinking about that when I was younger, but I definitely felt it now where it's like, when I start looking at the time on my phone during a scene in a movie, it's not a killer for the movie. Like, it's not going to kill my love for it or my appreciation for it. But the fact that I do have to time a scene sometimes shows that there is definitely a problem in pacing for at least my viewpoint as an audience member.
You know you go on too long when you have Robin Williams putting a condom on his nose where you don't really know where to take it. And it's one of those that it wasn't really planned out. It was improvised. You can tell because there really is no vision on where to stop this. It's Williams' action, a reaction shot, Williams' reaction shot. And this is where I go back to what I said earlier. And I think what makes it feel drawn out is where we have to be honest is we don't fully understand 100% of what's coming out of Robin Williams' mouth some of the time because he's going so quick and he's going so sporadic in the moment. You might catch some ideas of what the joke's going to be. And that scene is a perfect example. I can maybe pick out maybe 2-3 jokes out of that in the, like you said, 10-minute span, but he's just...
It's going. Crowd work.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just doing crowd work with the guys on these buses for like 10 minutes. And yes, it would be funny if it was like a comedy club setting, but even then, 10 minutes of crowd work is exhausting as well.
It really is. And it would be one thing if they did a couple of different takes where we can be engaged as an audience and pick up on some of the humor, some of the jokes, but we are basing it solely on the energy of Robin Williams. And when we can't understand a lot of what he's laying down, it does become exhausting. And even though we love Robin Williams and love the energy, at some point we can only take the transition shots of back and forth so many times. So I 100% agree that it does feel longer because it wasn't planned out or they didn't have enough improvisation scenes to really cut and paste to make it work, if I should say.
Yeah, so they just hold too long on what they're getting, anticipating if something else is going to come that's funnier. And it's obvious. I'd say like if I had only one other quip with this movie is that it does feel very rushed at the end. Like it does have a very quickly rushed ending. The climactic scene with Quan, I feel, leaves a lot to be desired because we really don't get any kind of closure on that character other than the fact that like, oh yes, he was a terrorist. Yes, he is the reason why Garlick and Adrian Cronauer didn't die in the jungle after their Jeep blows up. But I feel like that character earned more in the movie than what they give him in his exit. And then before you know it, Williams is on a plane. Like for a movie that, like I said, is in a way a masterclass in pacing and being able to like create this not necessarily happy times during war times aesthetic, but keeping the spirit light and really seeing some great character development, it really just shuts down very quickly. And to me, that's almost, again, is that intentional? Because it is kind of like how Robin Williams' character in the film and his performance is. It's laugh, 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 and then the laughter stops. And I feel like maybe that is the emulation that they were trying to go with for that ending, where it's like, sorry, we got to send you out. You know, you've had connections with a terrorist. We can't keep you here on the base, and goodbye. And I feel that is very realistic. I mean, I think you and I have both worked jobs where like there was a very beloved person who might have worked with us for years, and then they turn in their notice and the next day they're gone, and you feel like there's going to be like a long farewell, but no, they're just gone and it's back to work. And that's what this movie feels like. It's like this guy who came in and made such an impact on these people's lives, and then in one day he's gone, but the war goes on. I think maybe there is some intentional messaging in that.
There is, and you took kind of what I wanted to avoid from my comment on this, because I've battled this climax for, God, 35 years, because I have always had this climax lingering in the back of my mind that it was rushed. Farewell felt too rushed, but at the end of the day, this is what I've come to, is it was necessary, even though I don't agree with it, because when you go the direction that the filmmakers wanted to, you have to feel an element of war. You have to feel in a war movie the harsh reality of goodbyes. And like I spoke to earlier, what made it feel unfulfilling, I think it was going in the right direction after numerous rewatches of Juan telling his story of death and Robin Williams accepting that. But then he had to do that improvisation comment of, this is going to look good on a resume. That ruins that moment for what the filmmakers are trying to do, because I can accept a stopping point for this character and this chemistry and this relationship of him going off and saying, this is it. He was a terrorist. We have to go our separate ways. And I screwed you over. I can accept that because it is a war movie. We have to have some tragedy. But when we pivot from that to go to a happy-go-lucky baseball scene, to the plane, to everything beyond that, does feel rushed. But as you said brilliantly, is it has to be brief because that's the reality. And I think the human element of moviegoers is we want to feel good. This movie was supposed to be a comedy. We wanted to root for Robin Williams. We wanted a happy ending. This is a Vietnam War movie. There is no happy ending when it comes to characters. So you have to, this, I think, being appropriate, was the best it can do with the topic at hand. So I don't fault the movie for that. Do I think it could have gone a little bit more intimate with the characters instead of doing montage and then playing? Absolutely. But again, this was marketed for a comedy strictly. And this, I think, based on the marketing, it's what it had to do.
And, you know, here's the thing, is that you and I both like this movie. I feel like we just nitpicked it more than these critics did, and they are known for being nitpicky. So when it comes to giving the critique from my critic, for Gene, I'm like, hey, he liked this movie, and everything he said, I think, really definitely holds up. He wasn't afraid to kind of give it a little bit of a, yeah, there's a lot of improvisation in this movie, but the heart kind of pulls through. He's right. You know, if they didn't have the heart in the moments, then that already brief kind of anticlimactic climax would feel even more stark by contrast, because it literally just kind of comes out of nowhere. And so if you can forgive that because of what the movie does for you, like emotionally and tickling your funny bone, then yeah, they did a good job at telling that story, regardless of how fast the climax comes. I like it. I think I'm going to give him an A on this one because I don't have any nitpicks with him.
Yeah, Roger's a little bit different because I think Gene stole most of the thunder on this one of all the good pieces of it.
When he does a good job and he's the opening critic of a movie, he often does steal the thunder from it. And it's obvious now of all the ones that we've done where that happens, where if it's his movie to bring and he knocks it out of the park, Rogers, by comparison, does seem a little wanton.
It does. And he kind of goes into the mystery of the character, which if I were to see this review at the time it was released, it almost would have been contradicting to a lot of his other reviews where he wants more depth from characters. He wants more of an explanation. But at the same time, like I said earlier, some marketing, they wanted a comedy. So I get it. But I think based on, like I said, it's a timeless comment, almost a quote from Roger to almost define a man's career. So just out of nostalgia, I have to say that this one will be about a 3-star. Again, he doesn't go into a lot of depth with this movie other than William's performance. So I want to give him more, but at the same time, I can't. But it is a memorable quote from Roger on the legacy of Williams, just not in this movie, but holistically as a person. So a solid 3 stars for Roger.
I'm glad that this was brought to the listener request because, I don't know, like I said, I think this movie just kind of skips my mind because I've kind of put most Robin Williams projects on the back shelf because I'm so sad still 10 years later about it. There's just something about You're My Generation and growing up with him, seeing him on TV and then in movies and then hearing the voices and the cartoons. Like, there is so much attachment to that guy. And not even just movies, the stand-up, the HBO specials, the cameos and things. Like, it all is so unique and special. And I honestly can't think of another performer that has done what he has done culturally for comedy and for drama, TV, film, and stage. So yeah, it's definitely it's hard for me to watch Robin Williams. And maybe now that I've watched this, I can go back and revisit the ones that I've had on the back shelf as well.
It is hard to watch Robin Williams after the fact of everything going on without feeling something. And it's hard to put into words. I still can't put into words the love of Robin Williams because there will be no other. There will be no other performer that can do what he does. And we've talked about range on this show and both of our shows numerous times. And there is not one performer that will ever be at top of mind other than Robin Williams on what this man can do. And it is absolutely a pleasure to have Good Morning Vietnam be our first Robin Williams movie, because to me, again, just wholeheartedly, it is probably my favorite Robin Williams because it defined who he was emotionally and as a comedic element to a movie. So it really did test his range, and it's hard not to cry even at the funniest performances of his, because what a performer and just overall guy he was.
Funny that you mentioned range, because I wasn't going to mention this. I just only caught it the other day. So I caught some shit in one of our reviews from an old clip on YouTube, an old reel. I can't even remember what movie we were talking about, but I had made a comment about Anthony Hopkins, and it wasn't an insult. I said that it's not that Anthony Hopkins doesn't have range. I just feel like I'm always watching Anthony Hopkins in an Anthony Hopkins performance, regardless how good it is. I feel the same way about Robin Williams, regardless of what the character is or what dramatic range he's showing. It's still Robin Williams to me. He doesn't disappear into a character like some actors that you and I have talked about. Like, Gary Oldman disappears into a character. There's Gary Oldman performances that I forget are Gary Oldman because they are so cloaked by the performance, right? And someone was like, seeing Anthony Hopkins doesn't have range is like a next level ignorance. And I was like, obviously you got the wrong message from my statement. It's like, I was paying a compliment. Like, it's a different style of acting. There are actors that, regardless how much range they have, they are always going to be that presence in a film. And that's what Robin Williams is. And that's special. It's not a downside of it. Like, him in Good Will Hunting, that shows a lot of dramatic range, but you cannot erase the Robin Williams from that performance when there are other actors that just disappear into the role, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that, like, there are characters, and he's definitely, like, maybe the prime example of someone who can deliver an amazing performance every time, but is still that person, that persona.
There are so many different layers of range that, and we use range all the time with reviews and analyzing films, but here's the deal. Anthony Hopkins, he can play whatever he wants, and I'm sure he'll do a fantastic job. He has shown that. But the difference here with Williams is He has the ability emotionally and mentally to take a dramatic role, a comedic role, intertwine them, and still be, like you said, Robin Williams. And that's something you will not see from another performer. Everybody's going to have their favorites, and they will go to battle for their favorite actors or actresses. But there is nothing in my mind that will beat Robin Williams when it comes to the genre range, the emotional range, the comedic range, and how he handles both of them. So to me, range is going to be, with Robin Williams, a multi-genre element, a talent that he can execute and put all in one movie. We've seen that in Good Morning Vietnam. The Birdcage would be a good one that has a subtle emotional element to it, that you just want to follow these characters, not because they're just funny, but because they're emotionally connecting with you. That is my definition of a perfect range, is that they can emotionally connect with you. Not that the actor can do it, but they can connect with you. And that's something that's going to be different, to your point, versus Anthony Hopkins versus Williams, in my opinion. And that's a very odd comparison, but at the same time, it's going to be what your definition is of range.
Okay, so next week, we are going back to yours and my picks. It is my pick next week, and I am bringing John Borman's Excalibur to the show. We are very light on the sword and sorcery fantasy films on this show. I think we maybe only done like one, so I'm bringing another one, and maybe the most ambitious one, at least of the 80s, where we are telling the story of King Arthur and Merlin and all these great characters, but in an artistic, new Hollywood 80s fashion. And what does that look like? And what did it feel like at that time? I'm really excited to revisit this one because it's been a couple years, but I've never listened to the Siskel and Ebert review of it. So I'm very, very curious. And if you haven't seen Excalibur, it is a who's who of stars now, where you've got people like Liam Neeson and Cillian Hines in it and Helen Mirren, right? It's a great cast. And it's just a lot of fun seeing people dressed up in armor. I like it.
I can't wait. It's been a while. So again, we'll wait for the revisit, but haven't seen the review yet either. So it'll be a fun revisit. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll do one of yours, and then we'll have our next listener request, which is one I'm really excited for, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and we'll have a special guest on that episode. So anyway, everyone, you know where to find us. I am Antonio. I'm the host of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast. You can find me at thecultworthy.com. You can find my friend Justin over at
themoviewire.com.
Thank you for listening, watching, rate, review, give us 5 stars, subscribe to our YouTube, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.